is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, hoop heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish home machine. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hey, this is Brendan Winters from Pro Skills Basketball, and you are listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. One night early tonight on our NBA pod, considering that the regular season ended last night and play-in games are tomorrow. I have a question for you.
Go ahead, Mike.
The teams that are you of the mindset that this is the playoffs, or are you of the mindset that these teams that we are talking about tonight are not in the playoffs until they're in the 1-8, 2-7, or do you think this is the playoffs? I'm just curious.
That's a good question. I believe I read, and I could be wrong in the statement, that these will count towards playoff overall records. I don't know that to be certain.
Like, you mean like coaching and points scored and that kind of thing?
Yes, and I believe like
if the team
wins the game, it'll go towards their playoff win total. I think, if I'm not incorrect. So, like, for example, the Lakers, who already have the most wins in franchise history, in NBA history, okay, if they win this and they win their game, then that counts as a win in their playoffs, I believe. But don't quote me on that.
And the teams that lose and don't qualify, they're in the lottery, correct?
They are. They've got a very small percentage in the lottery.
Right, but they're still in. So, I don't know. You can look at it both ways. I guess my question for you is, just you personally, do you consider these teams to be playoff teams, or are you not thinking of this as the playoffs?
I consider the West teams to be playoff teams. Is that a fair answer?
I think this is the playoffs, even though it's not traditionally what we think of as being the playoffs. I'm thinking of these teams as playoff teams. Not that they're necessarily of the highest caliber, all of them, but I do think that once you get
here's
the
looking
postseason,
at you.
That first
playoff game. Here's looking at you. We'll talk about that in a minute. But
All right.
So I don't have any fun games tonight, Mike. We're just going to jump right in because we know we have a lot to talk about, and because we're going to be recording an extra episode, at least one extra episode this week, I just decided we would just jump right in. So weekend takeaway. So my main question that I want to ask you is: do you think the weekend this play-in situation truly helped the last week of the season or the last week of the season be exciting? Or do you think there's another factor? Because I have a take, and I haven't heard it on anyone else's podcast or discussion, and I listened to quite a few today. I have another take that I want to say, and this is, I think it's a fresh take, but I'm not going to say it until after you talk. Do you think the playing games made a major difference?
I do. I don't know that I can point to any real empirical data that would support that, because theoretically, if you look at the Western Conference and you take the Golden State Memphis game, if there is no play-in, that game becomes a game for, do the Warriors or the Grizzlies get in the playoffs and the other team goes home. So that would have effectively been a play-in game under the old circumstance.
Guys, yeah.
You know, so you have that. The Lakers, I think that's where a lot of the intrigue with the play-in lies at this point. And there still would have been intrigue around the Lakers because everybody is kind of maneuvering and jockeying to try to get away from having to play them. And so that would have still occurred regardless of whether you had the play-in. In the Eastern Conference, I mean, the games that were played, Boston, Washington, that would have been a game that, again, the Wizards, had they lost, could have been eliminated, and Indiana makes it instead of the Wizards. But I don't know that it detracted from the excitement. I don't know that it necessarily added to it either, but I can honestly say that I like it, and I do think that over the course of a normal 82-game season, that it's going to keep more teams engaged for a longer period of time. That can help, you know, and that's going to help the league to field more competitive games down at the end of the season. You're going to have less teams that are shutting it down and not even attempting to win because you have that additional carrot of the 9 and 10 seeds being playoff teams. I guess, like I said, I consider them to be playoff teams. I mean, some of their playoff lives are going to be short-lived and be out after one game, but once you play beyond the regular season, you get into the postseason, to me that makes you a playoff team. So does it add any intrigue to the last weekend? I don't know. I mean, there would have been intrigue without it, but at the same time, I think it feels fresh. It feels new. People are still trying to get a feel for what it means and how it looks. And I think when we see come Friday or Saturday, when this thing is over, it will be interesting for us to be able to look back and see, all right, what happened in that first game? And then the team that loses, how do they bounce back? And because there's no historical trends or precedents or anything that you can go back and look at and say, well, the team that loses the 7-8, then they usually turn around and win, or they always lose because they got down after losing the first game. There's no historical precedent to look at. So I think it's good. I think it's been good. Do I think it, if the old system was in place, this weekend would have been markedly worse? Probably not, but I like it because it's different.
All right. I completely agree with everything that you just said, but hear me out on this one.
Okay.
The NBA should only release the first half of the season schedule and then do the second half of the season schedule at the halfway point every year. Because...
Why? Explain your logic.
Because here's my logic. They knew who was going to be in the playoff hunt. You notice a lot of playoff teams were playing against each other in that last game of the season, right? And a lot of teams that were trash were not playing. Were playing against each other. Did you notice that?
There were some exceptions.
There were some exceptions.
But no, you could definitely set up the schedule. If you do it that way, you could definitely break up the schedule that way.
I think that's the way you do it, because here's the thing. You think of this way, Mike. I want to think about this. How many years did it happen that they scheduled a game that was supposed to be on ESPN or ABC, and it was an absolute trash game? Like, we were getting like the Knicks and the Rockets, or the Knicks and so on and so on. And I know the Knicks are in the biggest market in the world, but the Knicks were trash. But they scheduled these games so far in advance on a Saturday night or a Sunday afternoon, but the game ultimately didn't matter. Who's watching that game, Mike? Who's watching it?
Really hardcore NBA fans.
Exactly. So what do you do? You do the first half of the season schedule, and then you say, January, you know, if it's a normal season, the end of January, beginning of February, like All-Star break. You make it an event on the All-Star break weekend. You say the release schedule, the second half of the schedule is going to get released after the All-Star break. And, like, obviously I know that probably comes with some issues, organizations probably need to know how to schedule things, but maybe they have a tentative schedule and then they can have the ability to flex things around and shift things around. It's kind of like that the NFL does, where they flex games in the Sunday night football or whatever. But I think that giving them some freedom to maneuver, especially that last, few weeks of the season, would be huge, because these games mattered, Mike. There were so many games that mattered. And I know that, in an 82-game season that maybe it's harder to do that, but I truly believe that it was because of the scheduling and because of how everything fell, they had these games that they played and the teams that played, and it just happened to work out. And listen, it wasn't by coincidence that teams like the Wizards and Charlotte, they had to, the NBA, you could forecast out, 8 weeks ago, 9 weeks ago, these are the teams that are going to be fighting for playoff spots, and hopefully we can get it to work out. Well, look at what they did. They got it to work out perfectly. You knew where Golden State and Memphis was going to be fighting for that 7, 8, 9, 10 spot. You knew that the Wizards and Charlotte were going to be fighting for the 7, 8, 9, 10 spot 8 weeks ago when they released the second half of the schedule. So that's just my take. I really think that's where the bread was buttered for this. I don't think it necessarily – I mean, the play-in tournament's sweet and awesome, and it's going to be fun to watch, and I'm really, really looking forward to two of the games specifically. But I truly, truly, truly believe that them releasing that second half of the schedule later really played a huge role in this, in my opinion.
I think as long as you can do it logistically, I don't know what the opposition to it would be. I mean, it's not like, even from a coaching staff perspective, it's not like if you're playing out your first half of your season that you're already figuring out what we're going to be doing in April or May back in December. I mean, it's just not the way the games come too fast and whatever. I just don't think it matters. So yeah, if you can do it and it doesn't upset the apple cart of the logistics of scheduling arenas and having dates in place and all of that stuff, which again, I don't know whether it does or doesn't, or how disruptive that would be or was this season to teams and their arena partners. But if you can do it, I don't see why you wouldn't, because again, you're setting yourself up for some fun games at the end of the season, even if some of the teams that ended up games that theoretically were meaningful were only meaningful in the sense that those teams tried to lose the games on purpose.
Listen, fact that all these teams are afraid of the Lakers is hilarious to me. Listen, I think it was on the Simmons. I don't know if you listened. Did you listen to both parts of the Simmons podcast? Did you listen to one part?
I listened to both.
So when they were talking about how, like, the Clippers were talking all this big game, and then here they are. Like, listen, the fact that the people are afraid of the Lakers, who haven't been 100% healthy since when? January? February? March? Like, I don't even know. It had to be February, right?
Somewhere in there. Listen, the
fact that teams are afraid, I think there was a key point that I heard on another podcast, was you probably want to get the Lakers early rather than get them late, because if you get them late and they're still in the playoffs and we get to the conference finals, you're screwed. I'm sorry. There's no way, because they're gonna have figured out the system, provided that everything is okay. And I think there's a big question mark. I don't know. Did you see LeBron turn his ankle again at the end of the game?
I did. Yeah.
Why is he still out there? Like, it didn't even matter. They knew it didn't matter. I didn't understand.
Well, that's the counterpoint to your argument, is you play him later and you have more games in front of that where LeBron could tweak his ankle again and be out. And so look.
That's a big if, though. Come on,
right? But everything's a big if, right? I mean, it's a big if of how are the Lakers going to look? How are they going to look in game one? How are they going to look in game nine? Could they be eliminated in game one? Or are they going to be weaker in game nine when Anthony Davis has back spasms or when LeBron has some other kind of injury? I mean, who knows? Let's put it this way. The bottom line is clearly Denver and the Clippers both were trying to avoid having to get the Lakers. And I can't fault them for that. If I'm Denver, wouldn't I much rather play Portland in the first round, get that win under my belt, and then deal with the Lakers when I have to deal with them? And even if you say, okay, the Lakers are going to knock us out, as an organization and as a team trying to point to eventually where you want to go and winning a title, let's say you're Denver. Would Denver rather lose to the Lakers in the first round as far as their team development, or would they rather lose to the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals? Now, they don't want to lose to them either way, but if you had to choose, if you think you can beat everybody else in the West, but the Lakers are going to be a struggle, why wouldn't you delay that as long as you possibly could when that destiny was in your own hands? And clearly, the teams that had the opportunity to tank into what they felt was a favorable matchup, Denver and the Clippers, I mean, they did that. And I think you could easily argue that by virtue of, and I don't think either of those series is going to be easy. I don't think Denver walks all over Portland, and I don't think the Clippers walk all over Dallas. I mean, clearly Portland and Dallas could just as easily win those series, but I don't think you can fault Denver and the Clippers for trying to avoid what theoretically, if they're healthy, is the biggest threat to win not only the Western Conference, but the title in and of itself.
Yep. I completely agree. And listen, they were all posturing. And speaking of tanking, I think my favorite tanking moment was Minnesota somehow winning and Oklahoma City winning yesterday. The Cavs ended up tied for the worst record. So now they have a 50% chance of being in the top five. That's huge, Mike.
Yeah, that helps. I agree.
So thanks to Minnesota. Thanks, Oklahoma City. I appreciate your assistance.
Again, terrible win against the Celtics. Just a terrible win.
Because we would have if they didn't win that game, what would they be? The second or the third worst record?
We would be tied for the third worst record with the Magic. It was just a bad win. That was a bad win.
Bad win.
But whatever. It sounds like if you get in the top five in this draft, and then I've been hearing some rumblings about top six and top seven, I think you want to get in the top five. If you get in the top five, I think you're going to at least have a chance to get a player that most scouts and experts feel is going to be a guy who's going to help you. And that's all you can ask for.
And so, one more Cavs note. We want to send congratulations to Lindsey Gottlieb getting the full-time position as the coach of USC. Mike, did you see the picture of the team with the USC sweatshirts on? Did you see that picture she tweeted out?
No, I did not see it.
She tweeted a picture out. If it had all the players had USC sweatshirts on. And she wrote, I love these guys. Going to miss them so much. Why the sad face, Kevin Love? And Kevin Love was wearing a USC sweatshirt with the ugliest look on his face. Like, he was so irritated that he was being forced to wear this shirt. It's pretty hilarious. So you have to look at it. I'll send it to you. It's pretty good. It's a quality picture. So,
well, shout out to Craig Campbell and his daughter Mads Campbell, who will be playing for Lindsey Gottlieb at USC. So,
and listen, I think this is a good. I mean, I think this is obviously was a great move for her, and I think, you know, the fact that she's going to take over a program like USC, and I think the experience in the NBA is only going to help, even if it was for the Cavs who didn't play necessarily well for two years while she was here. I think she definitely learned a lot. So I'm excited to see where that takes her. All right, Mike, I think it's time to talk playing games. Does that sound good?
Yep, let's do it.
All right, so we're gonna go in chronological order. Now, Mike, nothing says NBA playing game is this game doesn't matter, as in playing a game at 6:30 p.m. tomorrow. That's what time they scheduled the Charlotte Hornets. Now, Pacers. Now, I want to be fair here. I want to be fair to both those teams. They had to work it out that since they were going to do the Eastern Conference on the same day so that it wasn't so late for the second game to start. But at the same time, I think it's hilarious that this game's starting at 6:30 p.m. because no one on the West Coast is watching this game, right? Am I mean, who's watching this game?
Well, now people are watching it on their phone at their desk is probably what's happening if you're at work. So.
Hey, shh, don't blow their cover, Mike. All right, so here's
what
we're going to
do. Cat's out of the bag.
Here's what we're going to do for each team. We're going to talk about the most important player on each team. We're going to talk about what coach do we trust the most, and then we're going to talk about who do we think is going to win the game for these games, and that's how we're going to break down each game. We're not going to – I don't think it's beneficial to our audience for us to break down the team and break down what we have. We've had the whole season to talk about these teams and, like, this first game.
No, I think I think the things that we talked about heading into it that you came up with are things that will get across the point of what we think about each of these teams and will enable us to make a decision about who we think are the most important players.
Okay, so the first game, obviously, like I said, was Charlotte, Indiana. They're playing at Indiana. Right? They're playing at Indiana. Okay. Which has really got to be saddening to the Charlotte Hornets because they were literally playing for the 8 seed and then they ended up with the 10 seed. They're playing at Indiana. I think my most important player for Indiana has got to be Sabonis. Okay. And then for Charlotte, I think my most important player has to be LaMelo because... I mean, he's what's going to drive them, which is crazy that I'm picking a rookie in the first round, which is, once again, I'm going to reiterate, Mike, LaMelo is the rookie of the year. There's no way in any shape or form that he's not the rookie of the year. Change my mind on that if you want, but do you agree with my most important players for each team?
I'm going to agree with you with the Pacers. I do think Sabonis is the engine that kind of drives the Pacers, and... you know, he's kind of become the hub of their offense. He's played well down the stretch here in the last 10 games or so. He's put up some pretty big numbers. And I think Indiana, so in his last 10, let me see. I know I pulled it up. So in his last 10, Sabonis is averaging 23 points, 14 rebounds, and over 10 assists. So put those stats together for an entire season and all of a sudden, Sabonis is a bona fide MVP candidate. I mean, those are pretty much Jokic's numbers across the board, maybe even slightly better in the rebounding and
assists.
He's
assist a Russell
totals.
Westbrook.
Yeah.
With a triple-double.
So Sabonis is the most important player. I don't think there's any doubt on Indiana. As he goes, the Pacers are going to go. On the Hornets, you can make an argument that LaMelo is the most important, but I don't know that he's going to play the most minutes on the Hornets roster, and I'm going to pick as my most important player, Scary Terry. And I think that if Terry Rozier can have a big game in this one, that Charlotte has a chance. And I think Rozier is much more likely to be a guy that might put up 35 in a game like this, whereas I don't think LaMelo's ceiling in this game is as high as Terry Rozier. So that's why I'm going with Rozier. I think his ceiling for the type of game that he could potentially have is just higher than LaMelo's. So that's why I'm going with Terry Rozier.
And that's a fair point. I mean, Rozier has played really, really well, and he's been key. He was really key when LaMelo was out. So I can understand that. I just went with LaMelo because he's flashy. I mean, is he Rookie of the Year, Mike? Do you agree that he's Rookie of the Year?
I don't know. Edwards has been really good in the second half of the season.
His team didn't make the playoffs.
Look, I know. Look, I'm just – you're asking me to make an argument for Anthony Edwards. The argument for Anthony Edwards is that he's really gotten drastically better from the first half of the season to the second half of the season. And he's gone from being more of a just volume shooter and I'm just putting up points because I'm on a bad team to a guy who has become far more efficient. I think
is he an MVP candidate or is he a Rookie of the Year candidate if you cost your team a pick? Come on.
Well, it's a totally different scenario. If you want to analyze whether or not Minnesota should have been winning, you could make that argument. But again, this is something we talk about on the podcast all the time. Like, you can only lose for so long before losing just becomes ingrained. And so if they had a chance to win with Towns, with D'Angelo Russell, with Anthony Edwards, I think if you're an organization like Minnesota, you're hard-pressed to say, hey, we're just going to lose on purpose. I mean, I guess you can sit those guys out, but at a certain point, you keep losing. Towns isn't going to want to be there. And I don't know, maybe that's not even a bad thing, considering what they've done with him. How much worse can they be without him? But nonetheless, Anthony Edwards has gotten tremendously better from the first half of the season to the second half of the season in terms of his efficiency. And if you've watched the guy play and you've watched him dunk and you've watched the way he attacks the rim, is he a perfect player? No, but as a 19-year-old kid doing the things that he's doing, I guess the bigger question for me is which guy's a better long-term? If you had to pick right now, which guy would you want? Would you rather take Edwards or Ball?
Oof. I think Edwards is – so here's what I'm going to say. I think Edwards has the bigger chance of being
a – I agree. Edwards has
a bigger ceiling. However,
I agree.
I think LaMelo has a lower floor. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense.
Okay. Look at us. I think agreeing, Mike. Well,
I think Anthony Edwards could potentially be – I mean, he could be a top 10 player in the league based on his athleticism and the skills he has and the fact that right now he's 19 years old. Now, will he get there? I don't know.
He's better than probably, the last Anthony that was on the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah, history probably tells you no, right? History says that he's not going to get to that level, but he certainly has the potential. LaMelo, I don't think LaMelo is ever going to be a top 10 player in the league, but LaMelo certainly is going to be a player who I think he could be probably the number 2 player on an NBA title team just because of the wide variety of skills that he brings. And Anthony Edwards could also turn around and become a guy who is the proverbial good stats, bad team player. And a lot of it's going to depend, again, on the next couple of years and how he develops in Minnesota and what
Minnesota does to help him. I mean,
correct. It sounds like Chris Finch, their new coach they brought in midseason, has done a good job and has a good reputation around the league. So maybe the fact that Edwards has turned it around and that Minnesota started winning, maybe you attribute that to a new approach that the coach has brought in that has livened them up, has gotten them back to where, hey, we're coming to play every night. We're not an easy team to compete against. And certainly when you look at it from only an offensive standpoint, those three guys have the potential to be a pretty formidable offensive team. I'm not sure they guard anybody, but I don't know. I guess if I'm voting, I'd probably vote for LaMelo, but it's close. I would not criticize anyone who picked Anthony Edwards for the reason that I described. One, just the fact that he's improved so much across the course of the season. And two, they started winning. And was the winning all about him? No, probably not. When you get your guys back, that helps. But he certainly has continued to produce at a high level while the team has started to improve their record. So for me, it's LaMelo narrowly, but if you want to say it's Anthony Edwards, I would not argue with you in the least.
All right, so now we're going to move to what coach do we trust the most? I don't think there's even a question in my mind, considering that the Indiana Pacers led a revolt against their coach the other day. I'm going to pick James Borrego. Do you agree?
Yeah, I'll go.
Do we need to say anything else on that?
No, I think we go with Borrego at this point. And okay. Hands down.
And then the last thing is, who do we expect to win? I expect Charlotte to win. Here's why. The Indiana Pacers record at home, Mike, 13-23. My pick, the Charlotte Hornets.
All right. Well, since we agreed on just about everything, I'm going to disagree, and I'm going to take the Pacers. So we'll disagree here. I think that the Pacers being at home, I think that tips the scale in favor of the Pacers when you have two teams that are fairly evenly matched in the mediocre middle of the Eastern Conference. So give me the Pacers strictly because they're the home team, and that's why I expect them to come through.
That's fair. That is 100% fair. I was trying to pull up here. They split the season series 1-1. Yeah, they split the season series 1-1. They played both games in Charlotte, though. So, We'll see what happens. I'm excited. I'm just really excited for this to start.
Malcolm Brogdon. We got to see if he's going to play. I think that's another important piece to it.
And now Hayward's completely shut down, right? Like, there's no chance he's playing at all in any of these games. Like,
I don't think he's playing these playing games. I mean, maybe at some point if they were to advance into the second round or something, maybe he'd make an appearance. But I don't see that. I haven't heard anything that he's going to be imminently back for either the first game or potentially a second game if they win.
Okay.
Brogdon, on the other hand, I'm looking at it right now. He's questionable and a game time decision with a hamstring.
Well, he's
going
to play then. So. If he's going to man up and play. I'm going to make a prediction. All right. Game two of that slate. The very intriguing. House versus Simmons. Wizards versus Celtics. Okay. I am so excited for this game. I want to feel like I spoke it into existence 2 weeks ago, Mike. I meant to pull the audio.
You've been a Wizards guy for a long time, so congratulations.
Yeah, I had them at the sixth spot, so I was only slightly off. But I had the Wizards. I spoke into existence 2 weeks ago when I said that I really, really, really wanted them to play against the Celtics, and then here we are. I'm really excited. This and the Laker game, which we'll talk about in a little bit here, are the two games I'm excited for, which means that, unfortunately, because the NBA is smart, they put those as late games. I'll be up late both those nights. So Wizards-Celtics. I think the most important player for the Wizards, contrary to popular belief, I mean, you would probably think it's Westbrook. Is he going to make a dummy move in the middle of the game? I have to go with Bradley Beal, because is he 100%? And what kind of impact? Because you could definitely tell in the beginning of the game yesterday that when he started the game 0-6, and then he was like 1-10 or 2-10 from the field, and then he definitely got hot in the second half, which is good. Like, what version of him are we going to get? We know what we're going to get with Westbrook. He's going to come close to a triple-double. He's going to be out of control. He's going to be a freight train. He's going to make differences on both sides of the ball, but at the same time, he may make bonehead mistakes. I think Bradley Beal is the most important player for the Wizards. And for the Celtics, I mean, Tatum's got to be it. And that's kind of where I'm at with those two situations. What do you think about the most important player for you, Mike?
The most important player is Russ, because I think he's much more of a wild card than Bradley Beal. I think Bradley Beal, yeah, his hamstring, he said it's not going to be 100%. We all know that hamstring could go at any time, theoretically, if it's not 100% healed. You tweak it the wrong way, and that can be completely debilitating in a one-game scenario like we have here. But I'm going to go with the theory that Bradley Beal is going to gut it out. He's not going to re-aggravate it. And if you have that situation, you kind of know what you're going to get out of Beal. Whereas Russell Westbrook, I have no idea what I'm getting out of him. I mean, I know he might put up good stats, but I don't know what those stats look like in terms of their impact. So I'm going to go with Russ there. And then for the Celtics, I mean, Tatum has to have a big game for them to win any game, let alone a playoff game. So, yeah, I think Tatum has to be the guy. You could maybe make an argument that, hey, you know what you're getting out of Tatum, which is, I guess, the argument that I made with the Wizards, that Tatum's going to be there no matter what. Who's the guy maybe that's more of a swing guy, hit or miss? So Marcus Smart could theoretically be a guy in a one-game situation that decides he's going to launch six threes, and one game he might make five of them, and the other game he might make zero of them. So from that standpoint, I think Marcus Smart sort of fits that bill like Russell Westbrook, where they're a little bit wild card-ish in that you're not sure exactly what you're going to get. And if you get the good version of each of them, you're probably going to win. And if you get the bad version of them, you're certainly going to lose. So that's where I would go with those two.
All right. Coach we trust the most. I'll let you answer this first, since I've been kind of answering all the questions first. You go ahead.
I think it has to be Brad Stevens.
I agree.
But
what?
To me, I don't know. I don't see this getting no, I'm not trying to make an argument for Scottie Brooks. I'm just saying that I think that I'm not sure that in this particular game,
it really is going to matter. Is that what you're going to say?
I don't know the coaching. I don't think this game's coming down to coaching. I think this game's coming down to which team is able to make smart plays in the last 4 minutes of a close game. And Maybe coaches have some influence on that, but I'm not sure that with these two teams, you put Marcus Smart out there, you put Russell Westbrook out there. I'm not quite, you just never know what's going to happen. And I'm not sure coaching is going to control that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree with that, but I definitely agree with Brad Stevens. All right, Mike, pick in the game. I'll let you pick this one first.
All right, the Wizards are beating the Celtics.
Wizards, the almost bullets. I'm picking them. I sent you the. Did you listen to the video?
Yeah, I did. I did.
Bullets forever.
That's a good song.
That's a quality song.
There's a lot of good lyrics in there. It goes into a lot of detail, and it was a lot longer than I would have thought.
Three minutes and 17 seconds on.
I enjoy the Cavs will make it happen and rally 2x2. Like that song, I think is only like a minute and 35 seconds, but it's of the same. Like disco 1978, you have the 45 record. It's of that same era and definitely has the same vibe and juice to it. So, well, yeah, I enjoy
Cavs have the real Cavs fan. The Bullets have the fan group called Bullets Forever. So that's the
there you go.
So it's good.
It still looks weird calling the Wizards. The Wizards, the Bullets probably predates your time, right?
No. That change happened in the mid-90s. So I know the Bullets. I'm going to Google it first.
Because Chris Webber was a Bullet.
Yeah, well, I think it had to be 95.
Yeah.
Because it was before Jordan, obviously. But let's see if I can say Bullets change. Oh. 97. I was off by 2 years.
Okay, yeah. So Weber was definitely a Bullet.
Yep. Well, it just was perfect because it's a good thing they didn't keep their name of Bullets because then they had the Gilbert Arena situation, and that would have been.
Do you have? Okay. So let's leave Javaris Crittenden and Gilbert Arenas alone.
I couldn't remember the other guy's name. Good job,
Javaris Crittenden. Anyway, okay, so. We both have the Wizards winning the 7-8, which gets them the 7 seed. Correct?
Yeah. Yes,
okay.
Yes.
So
yes.
Then you have your matchup in the second playing game, Celtics-Charlotte. Mine is Celtics-Indiana.
I think we're going to agree here, but we're going to agree with different teams. I think it's whatever team is playing against the Celtics. I think the Celtics get bounced, Mike.
I think there's a really good chance that they get bounced, but I'm going to pick the Celtics to beat the Pacers.
Well, I'm going to pick the Charlotte Hornets. And if I'm wrong and the Indiana Pacers win, then I'm going to pick the Pacers. So I'm going out on that limb, Mike. Whoever wins the 9-10 game is going to bounce the Celtics.
So the Wizards, in your mind, the Wizards are in, the Celtics are out, and then whichever one of those other teams beats the other one, that's my mind.
You think both the 7 and 8, you think the Wizards and the Celtics are going to
get in? I think the Wizards and Celtics are both going to get in. I think the Wizards beat Boston, and then Boston takes care of whoever comes out of that 9-10 game. I know I said it was Indiana. So I think the Celtics beat Indiana in that game.
All right. Awesome. Before we move to the Western Conference, let's have a word from our sponsors.
Hey coaches, parents, and group leaders. I want to introduce you to our newest sponsor, SnapRaise. SnapRaise is the nation's largest digital donation platform built to help teams, youth groups, and clubs raise money quickly and efficiently without selling products. SnapRaise builds your group a customizable campaign website, and students use their mobile devices to connect and engage with their biggest fans. My son's high school team used SnapRaise this season, and our team raised all the money they needed to fund their season, and then some. Getting SnapRaise started is quick and free. Just visit SnapRaise.com, and you'll get connected to a local SnapRaise expert in no time.
Hey, hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's A-R-Y-S-E. hoopheadse.com.
All right, we're back. We're going to talk about the Western Conference play-in games. These happen on Wednesday. We're going to start with the first game at 7:30 p.m. We have the Spurs at the Grizzlies. The most important players for these teams, well, I think the Grizzlies is pretty obvious. I think it's Ja. How's Ja going to play? And I think the only person that I would think about second would be Marshawn Brooks, and like how healthy is he going to be? Because like, I know he was not healthy yesterday. So how healthy is he going to be? But I think Ja is the most important. And then for the Spurs, I'm going outside the box here, Mike.
Rudy Gay?
No. Greg Popovich.
Okay.
And all here's right. why. All Can right. he scheme up this decrepit Spurs team that doesn't have anyone that's, in my opinion, a quote-unquote superstar or all-star? Can they come up with a way to bottle up the Grizzlies? Because you know that Greg Popovich, and the fact that they're playing on Wednesday, this gave Pop an extra day to game plan. It's a one-game series. He's game planning right now. So I'm going outside the box here. I'm like, and I bet you can guess who my most important coach is. I mean, who do you trust the most? It's got to be Pop. I mean, it's not even close. So I'm going to answer both those questions in one fall swoop. I'll let you go ahead and give your best players and then answer the coaching question. Although if you... What's the Grizzlies coach name again? I'm sorry.
Taylor Jenkins.
If you say Taylor Jenkins, Mike, I might have to eat a coffee mug or something here. All right, go ahead.
Okay. So clearly I think with the Grizzlies, it's Ja. And I would say my secondary guy would be Jaren Jackson Jr. just because he's been back for like 10 games. He hasn't quite been himself, but if he were to have a big game, kind of put it together, knock down some threes, running the pick and roll with Ja, I think he's secondarily important simply because he's a guy who could theoretically have a big game and push them over the top. San Antonio, I think you got to go with DeRozan just because he's had some playoff failures in the past, but his game is continuing to evolve and he's had a really, really good season for San Antonio. And so I would expect DeRozan to come up big in this game. And I don't know that I'm picking the Spurs necessarily, but I don't know that this game, theoretically, you look at it and you're like, Memphis is the up-and-coming team. The Spurs are on their way out. They're on their last legs. This should be a walkover for Memphis. And you already made the case that with Pop on the sideline that it's not going to be a walkover because he's going to have schemed up some stuff to be able to control Ja Morant, make some other guys beat the Spurs, and who knows? You get enough out of DeRozan, you get a 35-point game out of DeRozan, and all of a sudden San Antonio's winning that game. So I think my most important players, Ja and DeRozan, and then on the coaching side, I mean, I don't know that there's any possible way or any person on the planet other than maybe Taylor Jenkins' mom who would say Taylor Jenkins is a better pick than Greg Popovich. So I guess in this game, I'm going to pick the Grizzlies. I agree, I have to pick the Grizzlies.
Yeah. The Grizzlies are just a better team. They're just a better team.
I agree.
So, yeah, Grizzlies. Okay. I told you that one was going to be quick, Mike. I knew that one was, we weren't going to have much to say about that one. All right. The last one. Listen, the NBA couldn't have drawn this up better, Mike. The last playing game is by far the best playing game. Do you think there's any chance that this is the highest rated playoff game of the whole playoffs?
I mean, no. I can't imagine that it would be, and yet theoretically you have the two most popular players from a fan standpoint in the league in LeBron and Steph.
I'm saying it's going to be the highest rated game in the playoffs right out the gate. I'm saying it right now, unless we get to a game, unless the caveat being, unless there's game 7 in the finals. I think this is the most, because here's what you're going to have, Mike. You're going to have Cleveland tuning into this game. Cleveland is 100% tuning into this game.
Yeah, but you know what? I think the excitement builds over the course of the playoffs. I'm not sure that everybody understands the play-in format. I'm not sure everybody, when you're talking about casual NBA fans, because the casual NBA fans are the ones that are going to tune in to give you record ratings, right? I mean, it's not the hardcore fans are going to watch the Lakers-Warriors game, but they're also going to watch the Grizzlies-Spurs game. So it's the people that are more casual fans that are drawn in by the stardom of LeBron and Curry that are going to watch that and push those ratings up. And I'm not 100% certain that everybody's geared up that, okay, here we go. Like, a lot of people are still looking at these playing games as not really the playoffs. And so
I disagree. I think it's okay. going to be the highest rated game of the playoffs. And I'm going to make sure I check it.
I think you're wrong. But
okay.
it's going to be a good game. You want me to go first on this one?
Yeah, go ahead. Go first.
All right. The most important player on the Lakers is obviously LeBron, and most of it centers around his health, because if he's healthy, you know he's going to put up a 28-8-8 in every game this series. That's what his averages are going to come out to be. And if he's compromised in any way, it certainly opens the door for Golden State to win a game against the Lakers or one of those other two teams if Golden State does knock them off. And then if the Lakers somehow manage to get in the playoffs and LeBron is compromised, somebody's going to have a chance to knock him off. So LeBron is clearly the most important player. If you take away Anthony Davis and LeBron is 100% full-on healthy, I don't think that kills the Lakers' chances of winning a title. If LeBron goes down and it's only AD and that other cast of characters, the Lakers have no chance of winning a title. So that's why I picked LeBron for that one. And then the Warriors, again.
I wonder.
No surprise. It has to be Steph. If the Warriors are going to beat the Lakers, especially with a healthy or semi-healthy LeBron, I mean, Steph's going to have to get – he's going to have to get 40 in that game for them to even have a chance. I don't see Steph Curry scoring 27 in that game and Golden State having nearly enough points in order to win that play-in game. So it has to be LeBron and Steph. My secondary guys – I mean, I think for the Warriors, your secondary guy is Wiggins because you don't know what you're getting out of him. Draymond, you probably have a better idea of what you're getting. So I'd say Wiggins is the more important player simply because I don't know what I'm getting from him. And then on the Lakers, man, I mean, once you get by LeBron, I guess the easy answer is to say Anthony Davis, but I keep looking down the rest of the roster to see if there's anybody that might potentially swing a game or do something or have something big happen to them. And I don't know. I mean, I just, nobody else jumps out at me as a guy that I'm like, man, if that guy had a big series, it would be a walkover for the Lakers. I mean, I don't think anybody on that roster necessarily fits that bill or is honestly even capable of putting together some huge, you know, a huge scoring night or a huge series as we look forward in the playoffs. So,
yeah, I agree. It has to be Curry and LeBron. There's no doubt in my mind. LeBron's health being the big issue. Curry, just how crazy, how good can he play? So I think it has to be those two guys. It's not even a question in my mind.
On that note,
Steve Kerr has to be the coach. Listen, Vogel's a good coach too. I don't want to be like,
right.
This is by far the closest of the coaching matchups. It has to be, but you have to give it to Kerr, and primarily because Kerr's been there and won way more than Vogel has. And, you know, Vogel had all those years in Indiana, but then he also had the years in the Magic. And listen, let's be honest, would Vogel be having the success if it wasn't for LeBron and AD? No offense, Frank Vogel. You're a good dude, but I mean, Kerr's taken this roster that's basically Steph Curry and Draymond Green. It's almost like it's not as bad as the LeBron roster in 2018 with a bunch of corpses. Okay, that LeBron dragged to the finals.
It's close though.
It's pretty darn close.
It's close. Once you get past Draymond and
maybe Wiggins. Yeah,
it's pretty close
Toscano
to being
Toscano Anderson. Jesus.
It might be worse.
Yeah. I agree. I completely agree. So what I'm saying is Kerr has to be the guy because Yeah, he has to be. 100%.
But it's narrow. It's not this wide chasm where Steve Kerr is going to coach circles around Frank Vogel. That's not going to happen.
All right. So on that note, so I think that brings us to the pick, Mike. And I think we're both going to go the same route, I would guess. But I'm picking the Lakers.
In game one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So I've looked at every angle to try to not allow the Lakers to get out of the play-in games. I would love to see that happen just for whatever reason. I don't know why, but I just find myself at every turn rooting against the Lakers. And I can't really put my finger on why that is, but I just know when I sit down to watch a game, what I feel. So I can't do it though. There's no way that they're not losing. I mean, maybe if Steph goes for 56 points in a game, maybe they lose that first one. Highly unlikely, but maybe. But if they were to lose that game, there's no way that they lose to Memphis or San Antonio unless
LeBron's hurt.
One of the big two guys is hurt. Then that opens the door. But if both of those guys are healthy, they're certainly not losing two in a row. And even if they were to somehow fall victim to a historic Stephen Curry shooting night, there's no way they're going to then turn around as a healthy Lakers team and lose to either Memphis or San Antonio. So I think the Lakers make it. The question becomes, will Golden State beat Memphis or San Antonio, whichever team we end up seeing coming out of that 3-4 spot?
I'm picking the Warriors. I think it's going to be, I believe it's Lakers-Warriors that are going to get out.
I agree. I think Memphis could beat the Warriors. I really do. But I'm not sure I'm not sure Ja is ready to match stride for stride with Steph in a one game playoff scenario. I don't know that he's going to be capable of matching the kind of production that Curry is going to put up. So yeah, give me the Lakers and Warriors.
All right. In whatever order, you know, it's what's going to happen. That's what I think. All right. Anything else, Mike? I think we've done it all. I'm really excited for the game starting tomorrow. I'll definitely be tuning in. Is there anything else you would like to say that we have not discussed?
No, I think as far as the play-in, we've covered everything that needs to be covered. And it's exciting. And it'll be interesting to see what a one-game elimination game looks like. So it's also interesting that the games on the first night each have a different vibe in that the 7-8 game is not a win or go home game. If you lose, you know you're getting an opportunity to turn around and play again. Versus the 9-10 is you lose and you're automatically going home. So I'm curious to watch and see if there is a difference in the feel and the approach in those games by the teams as the game moves forward. So I don't know. I think it's going to be fun to see the one game, one and done scenario in the NBA with NBA players. And I'm curious to see what that looks like.
Yep. I agree completely.
And then the only other thing, I guess, that was news this week, and we can maybe touch on it briefly, or we can save it for next time. You had the Hall of Fame class from 2020 go into the hall, headlined by Kobe and Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett. Historically, an incredible trio of players, and we don't need to go through and hash it all out. And then I think the interesting thing in the next year's class is Ben Wallace. And I heard that debated in a number of places, whether or not Ben Wallace is a Hall of Famer. And I think I would probably make the argument that he's not, but yet you look at the Basketball Hall of Fame, and I think of all three of the major sports Hall of Fames, basketball probably has the lowest threshold in terms of what your production needed to be in order to get into the Hall of Fame. And it's interesting – it's interesting, the guys that some of the people that have gotten in, some of the people who are not yet in, but it seems like the Basketball Hall of Fame has, at least to some degree, some pretty relaxed standards for who gets in and who doesn't. So it's just interesting.
I'm really surprised you're not, Mike. Why aren't you in the Hall of Fame?
Why am I not in the Hall of Fame? I'm not sure quite what my contribution. The Hoopheads podcast is going to have to take off and do a lot more. We're going to have to get a lot more downloads.
What
before.
About Tony Snell? Is he going to get in the Hall of Fame?
Tony Snell, I don't think he's going to get in the Hall of Fame.
He put up the first career history. Did you see the stat? He put up the first career 50-50-100 season. 50% nice. For the field. 50.9% for the field, 56.9% from the 3-point line, and 100% behind the free throw line.
Tony Snell.
11 of 11 from the free throw line.
Congratulations, Tony Snell. That is a fantastic
achievement.
He's the
only player in NBA history to do that, Mike.
I like it.
That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
It is, for sure. Anything else you need to hit on, talk about before we get out?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm, like I said, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think our plan is on Friday for sure. We're going to jump on, right, Mike? We're going to jump on Friday.
Yeah, I think
and
so.
Break down what we noticed from the playing games and then talk about the series. Now, I don't know if we're going to go as in depth as we did tonight with each game series, because then that might be a 2-hour episode, and we don't really probably want to do that on a Friday night. However,
we'll do something along those lines. Here, let's leave it here. Let's leave it at this point. So we have to pick our finals teams. So we'll have to do that. But also, just tell me which one of the series that is set up right now are you most looking forward to watching? Of the ones that are set in stone right now, which series that's set in stone are you most looking forward to watching?
Probably the Nuggets Blazers.
Yeah, I would have that. I think I'm going to have
Milwaukee
that.
Heat. Those are the two.
Yeah, I think I'm going to right. Those are the two. Those are clearly the two most interesting series.
I could care less about the Knicks Hawks because.
Yeah, the Knicks Hawks. That seems like that's destined for NBA TV. And Clippers Mavs is interesting, although we saw it last year. So my number one is Milwaukee and Miami. I think this series is going to be a real barometer for what Milwaukee is or is not. If they obviously lose this series, then you're the Bucks and you got to look around and go, what are we doing? And if they win this, they exercise some demons from last year. They give themselves some confidence heading into a matchup with Brooklyn. And I think it possibly shifts them into being kind of in a lot of people's minds, a pseudo contender. To being a real contender if they knock off Miami. So that's the series I'm looking forward to. And in the West, I would definitely say Denver, Portland would be my second choice out of all the series that are set so far.
Yep.
All right. So all that being said, let's wrap it up there. Yesterday, we put out a roundtable question and a roundtable episode about we asked our coaches, what are some things that they changed their mind on over the course of their career? Something that they used to believe about coaching that they no longer think is true. There was a lot of great answers. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that episode, make sure that you do that. Friday, we got an episode coming out with PGC Basketball's TJ Rosine talking about the 5 key concepts and 5 key areas that you need to excel in if you're going to be a great coach. That's going to be a really good episode if you get a chance to listen to that. And obviously, as Jason already said, we're going to jump back on Friday night after the play-in games are over and before the first round of the playoffs start to wrap up the play-ins and preview some of the different series that we have to look forward to. So it's going to be a big week on the Hoopheads pod. Make sure you check out our network shows. There's a lot of great basketball content, both from a coaching standpoint and an NBA standpoint. We appreciate you listening, being a part of our audience. We enjoy coming to you 3 times a week. And in this week, we're going to get out at least 4, but we love talking NBA. We love talking to coaches that we have on the podcast, and we appreciate you being our loyal audience. So thanks to everyone for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.